Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 257. I had a chance to interview three gentlemen over at a place to shoot, a shooting range here in the San Antonio area. We talked about some pretty interesting stuff. We talked about what it's like to run a range. We also talked about some war stories. I interviewed one of the gunsmiths that's on staff, and boy, he had some interesting war stories to share about people who had broken guns, thought their guns were broken, and it really wasn't, and things like that. Also, a fellow CHL instructor talks about some updates in the Texas concealed carry laws. And even if you're not in Texas, I think you're going to find that part quite interesting too. But have you ever thought about what is it like to run a range? What goes on behind the scenes of a shooting range? What do gunsmiths at ranges often encounter? Wait till you hear some of the stories that Larry has to talk about. So here we go. Let's get right into it. I interviewed Alan Houck, Kyle Odom, and Larry from A Place to Shoot. All right. Well, we are here at A Place to Shoot in San Antonio, Texas. I'm joined by Kyle Odom, one of the managers here, and Alan Houck, also one of the managers here and CHL instructor, and Larry, the resident gunsmith. Guys, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob.
Appreciate that. I want to get Kyle and Alan's perspective on running a range and, give you guys a little bit of airplay out there. And also, Alan's going to talk about some of the CHL updates. And Larry's got a few gunsmithing war stories to share with us. Kyle, we'll get started with you briefly. Talk a little bit about A Place to Shoot, how long you've been here, what you guys are doing. I know you guys are making some changes. First of all, thank you for letting Ben and I teach here so often. Everybody that comes here, they love the Cowboy Range.
Well, you're very welcome.
They totally love it. I appreciate the good service. And Alan comes down there and keeps us on the straight and narrow every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But talk about running a range. Talk a little bit about A Place to Shoot.
Well, A Place to Shoot's got a very long history. We have people come in and say, my grandfather brought me down here and taught me how to shoot. So the facility has been here for a great deal of time. This is a new ownership under TKMW Enterprises and Brock Wilkerson. Started around 2010. I started here in 2011. The shop is growing and the range is continuing to grow. We're very happy that everybody who comes out, the vast majority of people who come out are very happy and keep coming back. So our customer base is growing. We are constantly under stress as far as obtaining merchandise, obtaining ammunition.
Yeah, I think everybody is.
Yeah, this past year has been a huge challenge as far as, keeping the range fed, as far as, people being able to come out and just find ammo to shoot. But, beyond that, we're making range modifications and growing. We're adding RSOs. Right now we're running three full-time RSOs on the weekends. So
that's great. That's great. I'm going to come back to you and ask you to talk a little bit about some of the challenges and the positives of running a range. I think a lot of listeners would like to hear a little bit about what goes on behind the scenes.
Okay.
You don't have to divulge confidential stuff, but a little bit. Larry, talk about gunsmithing here at A Place to Shoot.
Well, it's a challenge. I guarantee you that a lot of times I get called out to the range simply for somebody can't get a rifle sighted in or something like that. Sometimes I get stuck cases. I got a rod that I take out all the time undoing stuck cases and that. But I get a lot of interesting firearms in, some that I haven't seen, not very often, but some that I haven't seen.
Before I hit record, you told us about a couple. Share those with listeners.
Well, I've got one pistol back there on the bench right now that customer stated it was the size pistol he wanted, but he wanted one heavier. So I've never seen it before, but he actually took self-adhesive wheel weights and put them all over the grip and then wrapped it in electrical tape.
He made it heavier.
Yes, he did. He also made it ungainly as hell. But I get modifications like that all the time. I get some. I've had rifles come in with missing screws, so what they do is take baling wire and wire the barrel to the stock. I've seen some where they've taken paper towels and taped them to the butt as a makeshift butt pad.
No kidding.
Quill pad. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, I get a lot of that. Just all kinds of modifications to sights, everything else. Luckily, I haven't had anybody really come in with any major modifications, like chamber modifications, anything like that, something that would be dangerous. Most of the ones that come in still do fire. But they don't fire the way they're supposed to.
What are your top two or three requests for gunsmithing work?
Cleaning, sighting in.
Scope work?
A lot of scope work. I do a lot of scope work, a lot of scope leveling and that. People,
especially with hunting season.
Especially with hunting season. They want their one shot to count, which is what it should be. So they depend on me to get their equipment up and running and get it where they need it.
Good. What about pistol work?
A lot of pistol work, a lot of malfunctions when it comes to feeding and that, especially with automatics. I get a lot of automatics in. A lot of times it's just the ammunition you're using. Sometimes it's their technique. Semi-automatics, you've got to get a good grip on it because the pistol's not going to operate properly if you limp wrist. You just got to pop around.
A lot of people don't want to hear that.
No, they don't want to hear that, but sometimes you got to show it to them.
Actually, I have a story about that one. We had a customer come in one day with a Springfield XDS chambered in 45, and his complaint was that at least one – he would have one failure to cycle. The slide wouldn't close all the way, wouldn't go in a battery, and he'd have about one or two of those per magazine. And I said, well, sir, XDSs, particularly in 45, are very subject to limp wristing. Have you tried this grip? And I showed him a little bit modified grip where he locked his wrist out. And he was like, no, 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 it ain't me. It's this dang gun. And so he donated about 20 rounds of 45 ACP to me to, you know, show me that, no, it was definitely the gun. And I was using the grip I showed him and went through all 20 rounds without one malfunction, but he still insisted that it was definitely the gun. And so we ended up sending it back to Springfield, and they sent it right back to us, said, nope, gun's fine.
Interesting. But did they fix the trigger issue on it?
Well, I don't know if that was really going – oh.
The recall for the XDS. Recall.
Actually, that was prior to the recall.
That was prior to the recall. Okay.
Although I can't tell you that we have been getting some of the ones that were recalled back, and a good way to – or basically the way to check to make sure that it has been recalled and fixed is on the grip safety. You're going to see a roll pin inserted into the grip safety.
Oh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. That indicates that it's been fixed under recall by Springfield.
Yes, exactly. So that's going to be the way that you can tell whether or not your firearm has been modified as per the recall.
So, Larry, did you fix that guy's XD?
No, I didn't get a hold of that one.
He didn't give it to Larry for work on it?
No, I got. But I do have another one that is kind of interesting that goes on a safety issue. I've got a 45 sitting on the bench right now that has got a blown barrel on it.
What kind of a 45?
It's a 1911.
Okay.
What actually happened was the gentleman was loading up 45 ACP, and he substituted one for a 40 Smith & Wesson. And the 40 Smith & Wesson actually chambered, went into the chamber, not very tight, but it went into the chamber, and the firing pin struck it, and it did fire. Well, what happened is now the extractor claw couldn't grab the 40 Smith & Wesson to pull it out, so what it did is it took another 45 and shoved the case right up into the barrel.
Yep.
And squeezed the trigger. Well, the barrel's split three ways down, and I'm still trying to get it out of the slide. He's lucky.
Yeah, he's real lucky that he's even got a hand left.
Well, he's lucky also because I was there that particular day, and he actually had a silencer attached to the firearm. The silencer was unharmed, fortunately for him. Otherwise, that would have been about $1,000 down the drain.
That would have been a very expensive .40 caliber round.
Well, so far it is.
Kyle, do you see a lot of that stuff here?
Well, we constantly see one of the things you're dealing with is general public. Everybody comes through. They get their new gun. They go out there and they shoot. And the knowledge level is not always where it needs to be. So
We're working on that. Alan and me and Ben and everybody else, we're working on that.
Absolutely. If everybody's listening, the main thing is just make certain that what you have in your hand is what the rifle's chambered for. One of the things we even have experienced shooters, they get two rifles on the bench, two different boxes of ammo, and they grab the round. So
They probably do the same with pistols. They'll have two different calibers.
I wonder if that's why that guy threw a 40 caliber into the 45.
I think it was just inattention. He just wasn't paying attention. But we get I get a lot of stuck cases because people putting the wrong round in it, and it'll blow the case out. So, but on the safety issue, I'm very big in safety in that. If you come in and you don't understand something, just ask. We're not going to judge somebody because say, oh, you're a guy, you should know this kind of stuff. No, you don't know. You come in, you ask. We'll be glad to answer your questions, and we're not going to judge you. We're just going to give you all the information you need so it is safe out there.
And I'll second that. You know, everybody here is incredibly friendly except for Luis over there in the back of the room. But, no, I'm just kidding. Luis, joke. That was a joke.
Okay.
I've shot with Luis. He's fun. He's fun to go shoot with. Everybody here is really incredibly friendly and very helpful. Alan, let's talk a little bit about changes to the Texas CHL program. You teach CHL classes here. You do them once a month?
Twice a month, right. We held the CHL class out here twice a month. Actually, a little bit more about the range, because in addition to being a CHL instructor, I'm also the assistant manager out here. A place to shoot, we're basically a place to shoot pretty much anything that you want. We have rifle ranges at 25, 50, 100, 200 yards. And one of the best things about a range is you don't have to make that 100, 200 yard walk. In fact, we put the targets up for you, and we offer spotting scopes at all our rifle benches. And not to mention lead sleds for those guys shooting in the 300 Win Mags and stuff like that. We have a fixed rest there to kind of help the recoil. So if it does take, 10, 15 rounds to get your rifle sighted in, you're probably going to still be a little sore, but, you'll survive.
Yeah, good. Thanks for that range update.
Okay. Once again, we do have the handgun ranges out here as well. And each bay is done on a gravity-fed system, so there's no having to go downrange to check out or to pull targets back. Very, very rarely do we ever have a ceasefire on the pistol range, only whenever someone drops a piece of equipment or magazine forward of the line, then we do have to call a ceasefire, but that very rarely happens. Let's see, we also have an archery range that we have targets at 20, 30, 40, and 50 yards. In addition to that, we also have four clay fields. We have the games Trap, Skeet, Crazy Quill, and Country Doubles. So, like I said, we're a place to shoot pretty much whatever it is that you're looking for. And we also do training here.
You have cowboy action matches here regularly, too.
Oh, yes, that's something else. Yeah, definitely. We have AASA, which, Bobby, you came
AASA,
out.
AASA, yep.
And then also we have cowboy action matches the first of the month. Oh, I'm sorry, the first Saturday of the month. And AASA is out here on the fourth Saturday of every month. And but kind of to the topic at hand, CHL classes, we do offer them out here twice a month, the first and third Saturday. I recently got my instructor renewal certification up in Georgetown, and the DPS was kind enough to provide me with a kind of a summary of all the different updates and laws that went into effect. Some of the ones I'd like to kind of go over. First, we have House Bill number 48, which was effective September 1st. And reading off of here, it says, relating to the procedure under which a person may renew a license to carry a concealed handgun. Basically, what it says is that you no longer have to take a renewal course in order to renew your handgun license. You pretty much just have to go online to the website, basically familiarize yourself with any updates in the laws, because that's very, very important. We all need to be good stewards of the CHL program and follow the laws and not give the anti-gunners any ammunition to use against us.
No, that's and no pun intended there, right? But that's important.
Exactly. No pun intended. So once again, I do encourage everyone to, make sure that you're not just clicking the box whenever you renew, that you do actually take a little bit of time to try to update yourself on what some of the changes to the law.
How do you feel about that, Alan, renewing online?
Well, the constitutionalist part of me that wants it to be as easy as possible to carry a handgun does agree with it. I do have some reservations in the fact that I worry that not everyone is going to be responsible as we all hope they would be, and they don't update themselves. It still may definitely behoove people to go out and get some training, ask around, take some firearm handling courses, but also see if there's any educational opportunities out there to, familiarized with the laws in your state. And I will tell you, it's not required, but if someone wants to come and, just to familiarize themselves and, take a CHL class with me, I'll be happy to let them in the class. Good.
So renewing online, that's one major change.
Mm-hmm. Also, House Bill number 333, also effective September 1st, 2013. Basically, what that deals with is a hotel is required to put on their website and in their written guest policies whether or not they allow concealed handguns or handguns inside the hotel. And, Bob, I bet you've had some experience with that with all the traveling that you've done.
Yes, I have.
Okay. Let's see. Moving on. House Bill number 698. Relating to certain procedures for submitting legible and classifiable fingerprints with an application for license to carry. Now, basically, for people around the San Antonio area, this doesn't affect them as much. But if you live in a county that has less than 46,000 people and you do not reside within 25-mile radius of a facility that can take your fingerprints, because, well, let me back up a little bit. Whenever you submit fingerprints to the state now, as of, I believe, a couple of years ago, you have to go through the state contractor, which they've changed their name a couple times. They were L1 Identity Solutions, Morpho Trust. I believe they're Safran Trust
now. Something like that now, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. You have to go there and pay your $9.95. Make sure you take a check because they don't accept a cash or credit card. And you have to get your fingerprints done and submit them to the state that way. Well, the state decided that if it's too much of a encumbrance, you know, if you're living in, say, well, for example, where I'm from, Refugio County, there are no, you know, contractors down there, and so it'd be a long drive down, and probably Corpus Christi would be the closest area. And so what the state says is, if that's the case, let the state know, you have to contact them, and they will send you a form, and you have to take that form to a police station, and they'll be the ones to do the fingerprints for you. Unfortunately, instructors still, even under those circumstances, are not able to provide the fingerprints for you unless they just happen to be a peace officer who's certified to do that for the department.
That's cool. Alan, let me ask you to pause there for a minute. We're going to come back to these, but I want to shift gears just a minute. Kyle, when people come to a range, a lot of people come here, you know, just to shoot, to practice, test out their firearm and things like that. Talk a little bit about, if you can, behind the scenes, what do you guys go through to get everything prepared for people to shoot?
Pretty much prepping targets, you know, inspecting berms, keeping the backstops in shape. Basically, everything that takes projectiles ends up needing some kind of repair or attention to it. So it's a constant, you know, rebuilding, repainting, checking, inspecting. So there's pretty steady flow of maintenance flowing out of everything that takes rounds downrange.
I think a lot of people don't realize that. You know, they pay the fee, which I think your fee is incredibly reasonable, and they don't understand what's actually going on behind the scenes to keep the range running and keep it, you know, a good place to shoot.
Yes.
What, tell me, if you don't mind, share some horror stories and maybe some things. I mean, Larry came up with a couple, but, where you've maybe had to go out there and get an RSO out there and, get on some action that's not real good.
You know, our biggest issue is probably just basic safety procedures, you know, double checking, making sure customers are, you know, keeping bolts open, magazines out of their guns until they're in a firing position. You know, everybody, you know, likes to have their gun cased, and then when they go out on the range, it may be in the same condition they had it at home. So, you know, keeping eyes and tabs on conditions of firearms that are off the firing line.
I'm sure, like any public range, you get a lot of brand new shooters out here.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Larry's like, oh, yeah.
Portion of it is educating everybody as they're coming in.
I was heading out to the pistol range for a function check, and I was about 15 feet from these four gentlemen on the line, and all of a sudden I see the one guy turn around with an AR, luckily pointing at the ground, but about 6 inches from his buddy's foot, and it went off.
It went off?
It went off, yes. And then I walked up.
So he put his booger on the hook on the bang switch when he wasn't supposed to.
Yes, he did. And he asked me, can you show me how to load this? He said, you pretty much got that part down already.
Yeah, obviously he's got the loading part down.
Yeah, so we contacted an RSO, and he was asked to leave for the day.
I hope so.
It was very unsafe.
So he turned around with an AR.
Yeah.
came within 6 inches of his buddy's foot.
Yeah, it went off, and right there's a nice little divot right in front of his buddy's foot. And I just thought, okay, well.
If I was his buddy, I don't think I'd go shooting with him again.
His buddy was laughing. I don't understand that part.
His buddy was laughing?
Yeah, he thought it was kind of funny.
Well, I don't think he realized, you know, he had such a close call. I don't think he realized the full implications of all that. But, well, this one was another interesting one. This was relayed to me by one of our range safety officers, our RSOs. He had a father that was trying to play instructor, and he was showing his kids firearm handling procedures with a closed firearm, or the slide was forward, and he was not pointing it in a safe direction. The RSO immediately addressed the issue and said, "Sir, you know, we needed you to keep your firearm pointed in a safe direction and not, you know, wave it at anyone and keep it pointed downrange towards the targets." And his response was, "But it's empty."
They always are.
Yeah, yeah, they're always unloaded.
Mm-hmm. I think there's been a lot of negligent discharges with unloaded firearms out there.
A lot of negligent discharges with unloaded firearms. Well, I didn't know there was one in the chamber, right?
Oh, exactly. So it is it's a constant, you know, I won't say battle, but it's you have to be constantly vigilant out there. And, you know, one thing I have to say is I think our RSOs do an excellent, excellent job of that.
They do.
And, well, it's kind of like, a Roadhouse, I believe, where, you know, our rules out here are customer service, and we are nice, you know. One thing we try to avoid is the cliche of the crusty old range officer that goes around yelling at everyone and calls everyone, you know, stupid and thinks everyone's an idiot.
I've been to a range like that before.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we are very, very professional, but safety does take top priority, and so we do have to make sure that everyone is abiding by the rules. And, you know, we make sure that everyone out here has a good, safe attitude as well.
Good. Larry, how often are you asked to fix guns that aren't broken?
Quite a few times. I had an incident a while back. Not an incident, but a gentleman comes in and asks if I can sight in a pistol. And I said, well, what kind of pistol are we talking about? And he didn't know, so we went out to the pistol range where his buddies were shooting. And all the shots were low and right. And I said, well, give me 5 rounds. Let me see what it's doing. And I went out and put 5 rounds inside about a quarter, right where they're supposed to be. And he said, I don't understand it. How did you do that?
It's sighted in now.
I said, there's nothing wrong with the pistol.
And then Larry said, that'll be $35 sighting.
I let the guy off, but I told him about it. He was just anticipating.
Of course.
And he's just pushing it down.
Of course.
I don't know how it worked out after that. I had to get back into the shop, but hopefully he learned something from it.
Well, and the interesting message here is that it is typical. People are typically looking for a hardware solution to a software problem,
exactly.
And there's an example of it right there. Kyle's over here smirking. What are you thinking?
I call it the nut behind the trigger. that's the hardest one to adjust.
The nut behind the trigger, yeah.
The trigger control.
That nut doesn't move very much, does it?
No. It doesn't.
All right, Alan's got a few more CHL updates.
Okay, let's see. We also have a House Bill 1009 relating to the creation of a new category of law enforcement officer who shall be designated a school marshal.
Oh, I like the school marshal one.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And a lot of the schools, I believe, are going to have a lot of input on whether or not the people, whether or not employees of the school are able to carry concealed. For example, teachers and things like that. They already have some authority in that. But this basically just creates a new position. And I can tell you the state is working very, very diligently to come up with a good training course to put all the school marshals through. Right now, it's kind of a work in progress. Basically, they just mandated that this position will be made, and now they're working on
it. Is that a mandate? Do all districts have to create that school marshal position, or is it up to the district?
You know, that's a good question. I'm thinking it's probably going to be up to the individual school districts. Let's see. Further on, it says a training appointment of certain employees of a school district or open enrollment charter school as a school marshal and the right restrictions, limitations, and responsibilities of school marshals and authorizing the imposition of a fee. So,
yeah.
Let's see. The bill is officially known as Protection of Children Act. And let's see, it's going to be the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement, or TCOL, is going to be the primary agency for implementation. So beyond that, that's really all the state's putting out at this time, although it's definitely something to look into.
Okay. Now, one thing, just kind of for time purposes, address the bill, whichever one it was. It might be, yeah, address Senate Bill 299, because that's one of my favorite new laws.
Oh, definitely. All right. It's relating to the intentional display of a handgun by a licensed person to carry a concealed handgun. This bill amends the penal code by changing language to fail to conceal to unintentional display. So basically,
what's your interpretation of what that means?
Well, basically, it means that if you accidentally, or that is to say, you unintentionally display, you know, for example, you're reaching up and on the top shelf in a grocery market and your firearm becomes, you know, exposed, it's going to be more difficult for an overzealous district attorney to bring charges against you. Your lawyers are going to have a better defense.
Because that's an unintentional display.
Exactly. That was
now, prior to September 1st of this year, wasn't that was something that a CHL holder could be punished for, right?
Definitely. It was failed to conceal. And I believe that was something to do with disturbing the peace or something like that. Like I said, though, I had a lawyer take my class one time, and he said something that just always stuck with me. I like to remind students that, you know, if you get a good lawyer, you know, Texas Law Shield or something, you may beat the rap, but you're probably not going to beat the ride. So it's definitely something I encourage all my students to be very careful. Don't take the change in the law, the Senate Bill 299, as, oh, well, you know, I can just, you know, wear a 5-inch 1911 and, you know, an untucked T-shirt and I'll be okay because it's unintentional. No, don't want to, you don't want to, you know, don't try to.
Yeah. You don't want to advertise you're carrying a gun.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But it's just another layer of protection for concealed license holders.
Okay, I want to ask all three of you guys something about what you feel on a couple of things. Open carry. Okay, what do you think? Would you like to see it come to Texas?
I'm personally very of a split mind about it, and my take is that looking at officer involved shootings, a lot of police officers or a percentage of them end up being in a confrontation and they're killed with their own firearm, and they're generally carrying in a very secure holster. And suddenly we will have a lot of civilians out there who may wind up in the same kind of situations without the training and without the same kind of duty holster. Concealed carry, it gives you an advantage. Your opponent doesn't know it's there, can't make a plan for it, whereas if it's open, he's got a drop in kind of a lead time. He's made a plan, and you have to react to it.
And I'm kind of the belief that if it's concealed, it's a little harder for them most likely to get it away from you. Simply because, number one, they don't know it's there in the first place. And most good concealed carry holsters have pretty good retention as well.
I would agree. Yes.
What do you think about that, Larry?
I'm also kind of going with Kyle there. I don't think open carry is the answer. I think concealed carry, you're getting checked out for that. Why not just keep it concealed? It's pretty simple the way I look at it.
I mean, I've said before on this show that I'll fight for people's right to open carry, mm-hmm. you know, because it is a right that we do have,
right.
That some states, including this one, doesn't recognize that right.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. But it's not something that I prefer to do.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
I guess, you know, I'm pretty much up there with the Kyle and Larry. I mean, it's something that, yeah, I think we should have the right or the option to open carry. However, tactically, it's just not in my opinion, a sound tactic. You're just opening yourself up. For example, you know, you stop at the local, you know, stop and rob, and a bad guy is a really bad guy, and he's walking around and he sees that you have a handgun on your side, but he's intent on robbing that place. Well, fine, he'll just shoot you first before, you know, you even realize there's a bad guy there.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm. Possibly, yeah, and I should say that. Possibly. I like the element of surprise personally and try to make myself the least target or the least of a target as possible. And by carrying concealed, you know, I look like just an average guy and not a threat.
Now, some people argue that a person open carrying can be a deterrent to crime.
That's one of the reasons we open carry in our shop. It is a deterrent. And don't get me wrong, absolutely, as far as the constitutional side of it, I believe we should be able to carry. It's just that when you're in an uncontrolled environment, you're out in the public, if you've got a sidearm on you, it's definitely an exposed weapon.
Yeah, it is. Now, Kyle, you mentioned the shop. I got to compliment you on your gun selection here. It's improved a lot lately. Now, are you still having a problem securing inventory?
Absolutely. There's a large number of firearms that are coming back into stock and availability, but we're still not at the point where we were a little over a year ago where I could search online distributors and turn up a tremendous number of queries. You know, I could search handgun and have 30 pages of handguns come up. We're still at the point where that selection is nowhere near where it used to be. So I'd say about 80% of the market is back, but there's still quite a few that are hard to get or we have to wait a week or month to get.
Yeah. All right, we're back. We had to pause for just a few minutes, but you know, I had to take care of some business, make a little bit of money. But, Alan, go ahead. A couple more CHL updates you wanted to share.
Okay. Well, one, I'd like to let everyone know that now you can qualify with a revolver or a semi-automatic, and you will be able to carry either one. For a time there, if you qualify with a revolver, you can only carry a revolver. And I think a lot of that stemmed from...
I never understood that.
Well, law enforcement organizations are, like a lot of large organizations, are kind of slow to change. And for the longest time, law enforcement agencies resisted going from a revolver to semi-automatic. There were a lot of arguments. Well, if the internet had been more prominent back in those days, let me tell you, it would have been like the 9mm versus 45 argument that you see, or the Glock or not, you know, that you see on the
floor. Glock versus 1911.
There you go. Yeah, Glock versus, we're divided there because Larry is 1911, Kyle is Glock, and I'm somewhere in between. So
everybody knows I hate 1911s.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, there goes Larry. He's walking away.
Even though I own one, I still hate them.
You don't like you anymore.
Yeah. Larry's going to quit answering questions.
I'm gone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm just kidding. I don't hate the 1911.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, Bob, good thing you said that earlier. You'd be getting a whole lot of emails.
Oh, yeah.
All right. But like I was saying, though, there's no longer differentiation. If you qualify with a revolver, you can still carry a semi-automatic if that's what you choose to do. One more thing I wanted to add. This really isn't so much an update of a law, but whenever I was up at the state, I was talking to the DPS, and you actually no longer have to mail in an application if you use a Texas DPS website. If you go on the Texas DPS website under Services, Concealed Handgun License, and then the Contact Us, they actually have a form that you can fill out. You can put all your contact information in there, and then you can attach documents. So if you take your CHL 100, scan that in, your checklist, and any other documentation you may have to send, you can just attach it and send it, and that way it actually helps the state out a lot because that's less paper they have to deal with and taking the time to open envelopes and things like that. And I'm sure the state would definitely appreciate it. And, you know, like they said, there was 1 month, it was a little bit higher than normal, but they had over 23,000 applicants over the course of a month. And so, you know, imagine having to open up 23,000, you know, envelopes and all the time and stuff that takes. And so I think, you know, anything we can do to kind of help the state out, and that's one thing I also really appreciated. The state reminded us that, you know, as instructors, we're working together. You know, it's not us against them. It's we're all on the same team, and we're all trying to make Texas a safer place for everyone.
Good. Thank you, Alan. I appreciate those CHL updates. Kyle, you want to talk a little about, you've got a promotion out here called Ladies' Day?
Yes. It kind of ties in with, we're talking about the clubs we host. We host the Cowboy Action Shooters, AASA. We also host Girl in a Gun Club. Kind of flowing out of that.
I didn't know that. That's good.
We are opening up our Cowboy Action Range. We're going to run a Ladies' Day on December 8th. That's running from 12:30 to 4:30. And the rest of the range is still open, so if you've got a boyfriend you want to bring along, you can drop him off on the pistol range. But our goal is to have kind of a fun shoot. So the Cowboy
Action, it's a Ladies' Day fun shoot from 12:30 to 4:30?
Yes. So you can come down, pay $20. We're going to provide ammunition, firearms.
Are you going to provide firearms?
Yes.
December 8th. That's a Saturday, right? Or is that a Sunday?
It's Sunday.
Sunday.
Okay. So we've got our Cowboy Action Range. It's going to be pretty much dedicated to female-only shooters. They go down there. We're going to host a part of the bay. We'll have suppressed firearms, 22s. Cowboy Action will be running their center fires. Guerrilla Gun Club is going to have a more competition-style shooting area. So we're going to have a broad range of guns to shoot, center fire, 22s, shotguns.
$20 for 4 hours. That's an incredible bargain.
Yes. I guarantee you'll probably run out of ammo before the time is up.
Ladies, bring your boyfriends or husband. They can run around the gun shop here and buy guns and go to the pistol range while you're down there shooting and having fun.
Yes, but basically Cowboy Action is going to be blocked off just for that one event. The rest of the range is going to be wide open. So you can come out and enjoy the range or go down and shoot in that one specific area.
I'm going to put a plug in for the Cowboy Action Range. People who are listening to this that have been to the classes that Ben and I teach, they really like that range a lot. You got a lot of cool props down there, a lot of fun steel that people can shoot. It's an awesome setup. And we've even taught down there in the pouring rain. And you got a lot of good shelter down there too. So hopefully you'll have nice sunny weather that day.
Yes.
That's good. So, ladies, come on out. Hey, Larry, I got another gunsmithing question. Talk about some of the popular gunsmithing services that you offer here.
Well, one of the biggest things is cleaning.
Generally, you mentioned that.
I do a basic cleaning, which basically bore cleaning, and then just swabbing out the receivers, stuff like that.
What about trigger work?
I do a lot of trigger work. I do a lot of trigger work on just about anything that walks, talks, or crawls.
And Duracoat's coming
and
up.
Duracoat. Talk about that.
I'm going to be doing Duracoat here shortly when I get the paint shop set up.
Handguns and long guns?
Handguns, long guns, anything you want. I've got...
Tell people what the benefits of Duracoat is. Some people might not know.
Well, rust resistant. It is a good solid coating on the firearm itself. Impervious to just about any kind of chemical you want to put on it. As a matter of fact, if you want to recoat it, you actually have to sand it down, rough up the surface, and paint over it because you're not going to remove it. So it pretty much is a permanently attached barrier towards weather and all kinds of good stuff. But I do paint just about anything that that comes across. I've painted flashlights. I've got one right. The guy's been giving me a hard time about this one. I've got a rifle back there right now that's getting ready for a Hello Kitty paint job.
Hello Kitty.
Yes, pink and purple. With glitter and...
I wonder who that's for.
That's for a customer who's got a 7-year-old daughter. It's for a Christmas present, so I'm going to do it up for her.
What kind of rifle is it?
It's a Smith & Wesson M&P 1522.
Nice. He's going to give that to his daughter in pink and purple.
Pink and purple. And
Hello Kitty.
With Hello Kitty stickers all over it and glitter and all.
Hey, you know, if it gets a 7-year-old daughter to the range and shooting, that's great.
Just as long as they don't put my name on it. That's all.
I have to tell the truth. The whole, 7-year-old girl thing's a cover. It's actually Kyle's rifle.
Hey, yeah. Kyle, are you going to bring that out to the shop one day?
Well, I was actually going to say he needs to get good practice because I've got two coming up that in the next couple of years I'm going to need two of them.
Well, you got one too.
Oh, actually, yeah. Yep. About another year or two, she'll be getting her first cricket rifle, and I think the crickets are an excellent, excellent first firearm.
I bought my son when he was 7. I bought him a little Mossberg 22 Plinkster semi-auto, just a $99 22 that's run like a champ, by the way. At that time, I didn't want to drop the money on a Ruger 10/22. I should have, but I didn't want to drop the money on him when he was 7. But he started shooting that. He still has it, and that's a great starter.
Well, actually, something else, Bob, you bring up a good point there. I get asked this question fairly often. How old do kids have to be in order to come out to the range?
Oh, I get that a lot.
And our guideline is we don't have a set age, although some tips – whenever you bring smaller kids out to the range, even if they're kind of just sitting back and watching, we usually say if the parents want, they can just stay inside the shop and look around, and we have a nice comfortable couch for them to hang out on. Or if they do want to take them out to the range, that's fine. But we highly encourage them not to depend on the little, we call them the little orange plugs, the little ear plugs that you roll up and put in your ears. Those tend to be way too big for a kid's ears, so we basically require that they put some type of over-the-ear protection on them if they're going to be heading out. And, of course, proper eye protection as well is also very important. But as for kids shooting firearms, that's kind of on a case-by-case basis, which our RSOs, range safety officers, evaluate. You know, we're not going to let a six-year-old shoot a, you know, Smith & Wesson Model 29, 44 Magnum, or anything ridiculous like that. However, you know, 6 years old, if they want to, the parents want to provide, and of course, be right there with their kids as they're shooting, you know, a cricket or, like you said, a, you know, a little plinkster or something tapering 22, that's perfectly acceptable.
Okay, good. Thanks for, because a lot of people are probably going to want to know that question. If I bring my kid, you know, how old do they have to be? Larry, yeah. I see a note here. Talk about your 1911 custom work that you do.
Well, I do a lot of work on, a lot of custom work on 1911s. It's a passion of mine.
Good.
It's just about anything that you want done with one, I can do it. And I'm working on a couple of custom builds right now. I also do just simple things, beaver tail safeties, things like that, trigger jobs. I do a lot of trigger jobs on them.
Polishing feed ramps, stuff like that.
Definitely. It's
reliability
every
work.
Everyone that comes in gets polished. It doesn't matter what it's in for, it gets polished anyway. I like to make them. I want them reliable.
Mm-hmm. So you're a 1911 aficionado, I'm sure.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I got to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Full-length guide rod or not?
No.
No?
Nope.
Why?
I like the original design. Full-length guide rod sometimes can slow it down. If you slow it down, you're going to have misfeeds. I don't like the...
Because a lot of manufacturers is putting those full-length guide rods in
there.
I know they are,
and I still don't like them.
Yeah,
but if you want one, I'll put it in there and I'll polish it to where it's slick. But I just don't like them.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of like you. I like the original design. The
original design has worked for years and years, and it will continue to work.
Okay, next question: firing pin plunger safety, yes or no?
Series 80s, no.
not part of the original design.
No, it's not. I like Series 70, and if you have a Series 80, you want me to work on it, just be prepared for the cursing.
For the what?
The cursing. You're going to hear it from the shop. Trying to get her back together, but I can also alter them and turn them back into a regular Series 70.
Okay.
Which is, in my opinion, the best way to go.
The way it was originally designed.
The way it was originally designed.
Good. Well, we're almost finished, but let's talk, you know, I'm going to give the floor to you guys. I've been asking a lot of leading questions. If you guys want to take a little bit of time to promote the range, let's talk about that. Kyle?
Well, we try to be, you know, educators first, keeping everything safe. I wish everybody good luck as far as the market coming back. Believe me, I know dealing with customers that everybody's had a very frustrating year as far as finding ammunition and firearms. It is getting better. And you know, have a good holiday season.
Good.
Oh, well, something I'd like to say is whenever I first started working at a place to shoot, I had more of a military background. But working here has been incredibly, incredibly educational for me. And I think that's probably the shop's, in terms of the store, gun sales and selling accessories and ammunition, I think that's probably one of our biggest strengths. Yeah, you might be able to find a firearm for $5 cheaper somewhere else. You know, I won't mention any competition. But I think a lot of times, you know, you're paying for that because, you know, if you're asking intelligent questions or trying to get information about it from the sales staff, they're like, the bullets come out this end.
Oh, man, you just hit on a hot button for me. Yes, you guys are incredibly knowledgeable. Some places you go to, and I won't mention names, but they're totally ignorant to how their firearms work.
And one of the things you know, I like to brag about around here is, you know, hey, I may not know the answer, but I bet you someone in the shop does. And we have a wide, you know, array of expertise here. You know, Larry's been a huge asset to the team, bringing in a lot of years of gunsmithing knowledge. Kyle knows some stuff too, but actually whenever it comes to Glocks, Kyle is probably the most knowledgeable person about Glocks that I know. And you know, we have shotgunners, we have competition shooters, pretty much anything that you really need. And one of the other things that we like to do here is whenever people come in and they start talking about guns, we like to, you know, ask them questions. Well, what's the purpose of the firearm? Not just, yeah, what do you want? You know, things like that. So
yeah, that's good. That's good. And from now, I got to announce this, from now to the end of the year, anybody listens to this show
Is it? It's Alan. Is it 20% discount?
A 20% discount on shooter's fees.
20% discount on shooter's fees. I have a coupon that I will email to you. Everybody who listens to my show, they know how to get a hold of me. Bob@handgunworld.com is my email. Send me a request if you're in the greater San Antonio. Well, it doesn't matter where you live, but if you want to come here to a place to shoot and shoot, you get 20% off range fees till the end of the year.
Yes.
So I will send you the coupon in the email. I've got it. Alan put it together. Thank you very much, Alan. I appreciate that because I don't know how to do that. So you did it, and that's good. Guys, thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
I appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Thanks to you, Bob.
Well, guys, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time that you donated. And by the way, if those of you are in the San Antonio area and you want to go over to a place to shoot and do some shooting, take advantage of the 20% off that we talked about. Email me, bob@handgunworld.com, and I will send you a coupon. You have to have a coupon with a barcode on it, and you'll save 20% off of your range fees. Again, email me your request, bob@handgunworld.com. I will email you the barcode that you need to save money between now and the end of the year at a place to shoot. Go over there and practice. They also wanted me to remind you to check out their Facebook page. Just search Facebook, search a place to shoot on Facebook. I'll put a link in the show notes for their Facebook page, and also I'll put a link to their website as well. Now, Mexican Joe, who also listens to this show, sent in some pretty interesting audio commentary here. And he's been a pretty active in the forum and stuff like that. So let's go ahead and listen to his audio commentary, and then I'll have some comments about it.
Hey, Bob, Mexican Joe here. I wanted to call in about episode 256 on the Handgun World. I left your voicemail earlier about permits and concealed weapons permits and mandatory training or training. I'm continuing to listen to the next and following podcasts that go further into it about Dick Medcalf, and I was unaware of that. But I guess it's hard to articulate things sometimes, and that's probably what Dick Medcalf did. I know that when you said things, you've had to retract it because you didn't mean it the way it came out, or it just wasn't articulated the right way. Throughout the day, after I've listened to the podcast and I called in the other voicemail, I got to thinking more about it. I used to live up in the Seattle-Tacoma area of Washington State, very liberal state, and I went in and applied for a concealed weapons permit there when I lived there, and I got it. No training, criminal background check. My background check actually came back before I finished filling out my paperwork, which took about half an hour, 45 minutes. And within about 3 weeks, I got my permit to carry in the mail, and I carried. It was great. I had no training. Now, on the flip side of that, I have all of my military training. Now, that didn't matter to them. All they cared about was the permit or about the background check. Now, I've done my training for Texas, and I'm waiting for my Texas concealed carry permit. I had to go through training for Texas. I guess what I'm trying to say is it was convenient that I didn't have to have any qualification to get my concealed weapons permit, but at the same time, it didn't bother me that I had to have qualification for the state of Texas to get my permit. So to me, it's kind of six in one hand, half dozen in the other. My reasoning in my prior voicemail about why I think it's a good idea to have some qualification is because just because you can go out and purchase a firearm, which anybody who can pass a criminal background check should be able to do. I do not believe that people who cannot pass a criminal background check should be able to own a firearm. There's a reason. If they can't pass a background check, then they don't need to have a firearm. There's a reason. They're a criminal. Okay. So, going further into it, the amount of training that Texas requires is not that much training. I've taken it now with the newer standard of the 4 to 6 hours. Most of the training was on the law and understanding the laws and things that people don't know. And we've got cops that don't understand all of the laws. So if we're going to carry, we need to be above and beyond that. And I think that is responsible. I don't have a problem with the fees. I'm a veteran, so my fees were less than some people. The training was not that bad. It took up a day of my time. It didn't bother me. So some states have requirements for training, some don't. There is some regulation. I don't have a problem with some regulation. So if people want to fire me like they did Dick Metcalf, fine, whatever. I think it's irresponsible for people to have a gun and not know how it works. I do training with people all the time to show them and give them familiarization. I am not certifying them to go out and carry a firearm. I'm giving them familiarization training. So, I mean, that's just my view on it. I'm kind of caught in the middle. I can go either way. I think it's great that people carry firearms. I think everybody should generally have the right to. But it doesn't bother me that there are some regulations in my state to carry some that I have to prove that I can be safe. Again, the legal aspect of the class was outstanding. I learned a bunch of things that I didn't know. And in Texas, some things are more lax. Even though there is a law that says you can or can't do this, cops don't care as long as you're honest and open and okay with it. As long as you're not, cool with it, and they'll let you slide on a little bit of stuff. Okay, so that covers the concealed weapon stuff. Now, on the safeties, I agree with the other part of a podcast that you'd said. Safeties is a software that they've given a hardware fix to a software problem. I agree. I learned to do most of my pistol shooting in the military, so using the 1911, so I had the safety. I've got a couple other sidearms, Springfield XD and a Ruger P89, and they all have safeties. I prefer safeties on the lower receiver. I like that because sometimes I've looked at Berettas and I've checked Berettas, and the Beretta safety is too high for me. My hand is not that big. So if I can't reach it, I'm not going to get that gun. What I do, and it's something I think I've seen you do, is that when my sidearm comes out, there's a plane somewhere between pointing straight down and pointing straight out. Somewhere right in the middle there, as that gun comes up, that safety gets swept off. And you're prepared to engage your target. Finger stays off the trigger. Then, after you've done whatever you're going to do, or whether you've done nothing at all, as that gun comes back, as that sidearm comes back, as it hits that same point between straight out and straight down, as it comes back to that point, the safety goes back on. So, for me, it's training. I mean, that's just natural for me. The safety is on at all times when it goes in the holster. One, of course, because I've got a 1911 and some other sidearms. Some of my sidearms have the palm safety. That doesn't bother me either. I learned with a 1911, it's not a big deal. Training is the big key when it comes to safeties. I understand I've got some friends who have Glocks, and they love them, and that's fine. We pick on each other just because we're going to anyway, whether we're Army, Navy, Marines, or even some of the Air Force guys. But the point is, it's training. Safeties to me are not that big a deal. If you have them, great. If you don't, fine. The key to, irregardless of what it is and what the weapon is, know your weapon, train with your weapon, be familiarized with your weapon. In combination of all of this, of both of these, is whether it has to do with training, concealed weapons permits, whether you need the training or required to have the training or not have the training, whether we're talking safeties, whether you have a safety or don't have a safety, it really breaks down to a simple point of responsible. Be responsible. Now, I don't think it is irresponsible to not have to get training to get a concealed weapons permit. That it really is up to the state and your local jurisdiction. It doesn't bother me to get the training. I do think it is irresponsible to carry a firearm with no training of how that firearm operates. I do think it is irresponsible to carry a firearm and not know the state laws, because you can get yourself into some serious trouble. Just carrying a firearm is not irresponsible. It's not getting the training that is irresponsible. So, I want to be very proactive and be very responsible. I want to be able to show in a court of law should something ever happen.
All right, thank you, Joe. Few comments I want to make. As I said last week,
you know, I've changed my position. I don't believe that the government should mandate training to buy or carry, certainly never to buy, and definitely not to carry a weapon. Now, again, that's the system that we have in many states. Here's something I want you to consider, however. I teach, most of you know, I teach the Texas Concealed Handgun course. So I can teach and certify people to carry a gun in the state of Texas. With the new format, most of what we focus on are the laws regarding where you can carry your handgun, okay, and how it must be concealed. And, you know, we cover handgun safety, and we cover, you know, the handgun safe, the safety of handgun use, and we cover how to store it, and I've talked about that many times. But here's a question I want you to think about. What if this type of a course was not required? And in many states, it's not required, okay? And what if the person who's carrying a gun never gets educated as to where they are legally allowed to carry? Or what if concealed carry is required and they don't know what properly concealed means? All right? Think about that. And so what if they're carrying their gun in the wrong place at the wrong time, and it was illegal to carry there because they were never educated as to where they could legally carry. So here's my point. Perhaps these courses, these concealed carry courses, are more for your protection than anything else. You, the person who wants to carry, maybe these courses are for your benefit and for your protection, not just to satisfy the state, but to give you an education as to where and when you can and cannot carry your gun, so you don't get in trouble for carrying where you're not supposed to. All right, just think about that, because these courses can help you also and not just be some state mandated requirement. I want you to think about, you know, have you ever really thought about it that way? Have you ever thought that maybe a brief course on when and where you can carry your gun and when and where you can use your gun and how you can use your gun and the laws in your state regarding deadly force, maybe it could save your butt one day? I just want you to kind of consider that and think about it. So with all that said, and this interview and Joe's voice submission there, thank you very much, folks, for listening to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Before I sign off, let me just mention that we have one more class. Ben and I have one more class coming up in December, December 7th and 8th. It's our two-day class, although you don't have to take both days. The first day is pistol. The second day is rifle. Go to handgunworld.com. Check it out. The holidays are coming up. Please do your Amazon shopping through my Amazon link on my page. Go to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store, and I'll get a little bit of a commission. It'll help support the show. Don't forget about the Shooters Club. You can renew your Shooters Club membership for $50. So those of you who are Shooters Club members, you can renew for another year for $50. I'll send you an email reminder once it's time for you to renew. So we thank you very much. It's our way of saying thank you and supporting us for another year is by giving you a discount. Instead of $75, it's $50 for a renewal. Of course, it's always $8 a month if you can't invest the full amount right away. Let me give a quick shout out to Sturdy Belt, sturdybelt.com. I tell you what, David has done a lot for this show and for the supporters and for the people who listen and buy his products. He makes fantastic, good-looking gun belts and good holsters. Also, American Gun Oil, the official sponsor. Go over and check out Michael's page, AmericanGunOil.com. And in the show notes, there's a special page for podcast listeners to this show, a special page for you to visit and get a discount on the shipping if you buy American Gun Oil. I like it. On Your Six Designs, those of you who are Shooters Club members, On Your Six Designs makes great Kydex holsters. And I've been using them lately, and that's good stuff, real good. Very thin, very comfortable, very fast. He's giving a discount if you are a member of the Shooters Club. Don't forget Texas Law Shield. If you let them know that you heard about this promo on my show, you get 2 months free for a one-year membership. That's TexasLawShield.com or USLawShield.com. And don't forget about Concealment Solutions. Jason Christensen makes terrific products. I'm wearing my Black Mamba right now, my Glock 19 and my Black Mamba CE version. I think he makes some of the best hybrid holsters on the market. And last but not least, Polite Society holsters also. He sent me a sample that I'm testing out. Every one of these is slightly different. And I got to tell you, I've become a real big believer in these hybrid holsters. I think they're really definitely the way to go. For appendix carry, I like the thin Kydex holsters like On Your Six Designs and the Dale Fricke Archangel and so forth that I've talked about many times. But check out all those websites. They're supporters of my show, and they make some really good stuff. So once again, that's ConcealmentSolutions.com and Polite Society Holsters. You can Google all those. All right, folks, thanks for tuning in. I'll catch you next week. Goodbye.